You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Cleveland! This is for you!
All right, Evan, let's hop right into this. So what you and I are going to do for two episodes this week is talk about some different moments, talk about some of the big best moments of this 2019-20 Cavs, or 2019-20 Cavs season. So on the first podcast, which we'll do today, it will be Kevin Porter Jr., Darius Garland's kind of best game of the season, and then the rise of Colin Sexton. And then on the second podcast, the transition from one JB to another JB, Tristan Thompson's kind of resurgent year and kind of how good he's been, and then the Cavs' best win of the season, the win against the Miami Heat in overtime. But let's start with Kevin Porter Jr., Evan. We've talked a lot about him. I think he's been the most talked about Cavs young player aside from Colin Sexton. I think probably the most positively talked about Cavs young player. But is there any other, before we get into a kind of a talking point about what he is and what he sort of isn't, what do you make of, if you've had time to think about this and kind of evaluate this, is there anything different you that's come up for you about Kevin Porter Jr.?
I mean, in the moment, you and I were both super high on him and really just hyping him up. And this is all things considered after, you know, listening to Trevor McNaughty and kind of drinking his Kool-Aid for too long that I at least was down on the pick when the Cavs picked him up, because I know Trevor was less than thrilled at the time when Cleveland acquired Kevin Porter. But just like with, oh my gosh, it feels so long ago. So it's been a little over a month since the season technically came to a screeching halt. And with a little bit of time removed, I'm still pretty firm on the stance that Kevin Porter, you can make a case for being a top 10, possibly even a top 5 talent in his draft class, just because of how things have shaken up. And the Cavs got, in terms of value, the best player possible at 30th overall, and certainly trumps a lot of players that were picked before him, even one Darius Garland and Dylan Windler, who Kevin Porter shares a draft class with.
So the thing with Kevin Porter Jr., I think, is unequivocally true, is that he's ridiculously talented, right? Like, this guy is just unbelievable in every kind of way you want to look at it. He's, you know, just kind of dominating in every sense of the word. He's going to do all of that stuff that we really expect of a guy that of his athletic ability. And I think the thing that when I think about him this season, that is going to just be the most standout thing for me is just going to be that. It's just going to be what he's doing in terms of athleticism. Like, he's clearly very raw. The footwork, his ability to sort of know exactly where to go, all that stuff is sort of still kind of figuring itself out. But this is a guy that I think, you know, pretty clearly is very athletic, does sort of have a high floor in terms of kind of the way he's going to kind of figure some stuff out for himself. And when you just think about him in terms of his kind of where he's at, like, this is a guy that didn't have a full college season. This is a, you know, didn't have kind of everything kind of break right for him to kind of set him up in a way that was going to make life really easy for him in terms of his kind of college program. And he's a guy that I think has come in. You hear no one on the Cavs say anything bad about him. You hear no one in the organization really kind of have any concerns about what he is or where he's going to go. And yeah, and just when I think about him, it's just, I think the hope is that this is like a baseline of something that is going to pick up for him. And then in time, I think the idea is that this is the baseline. Evan, I'm going to keep talking. I just got to run in and lock the front door real quick, but just keep talking. I'll edit this out.
Okay. That's fine. You definitely make a good point there about the potential of Kevin Porter just being through the roof. And it's funny you mentioned that the Cavs say nothing but glowing things about Kevin Porter. I mean, that's pretty much the organization's MO externally. When you talk to some people within the organization just about how Kevin Porter, is by all accounts just like a good guy. Like, that just seems like something the Cavs do for all their players. Like, I don't think they ever will actually say anything bad. I don't think actually any team would. But no, if you look behind the scenes as well, like, he's really formed a rock solid bond with a lot of assistants on the staff and members of the organization within. And I think this is a bit of definitely a genius flex on Kobe Altman's part, because shout out to Jeff Namina, friend of the pod. He kind of has planted the seed in my head where we can kind of like be a little shaky on Kobe's drafting acumen. I mean, the only pick he's really 100% hit on so far is Kevin Porter, but based on where he was picked and everything else, and to get out, it's a slam dunk pick, no pun intended, because he's such a ferocious attacker of the basket, but I've really enjoyed the Kevin Porter experience, and I actually do have an interesting question for you. How nervous are you that the good times will come to a screeching halt in his sophomore season, and we have to, like, maybe this is me being looking at the glass half empty instead of it being half full right now with Kevin Porter's stock, but, like, what if reality kind of comes crashing in back in, and, like, the potential starts to run out, and we start to get an idea of maybe Kevin Porter doesn't have the sky high potential? And
well, I think I would just say to that, like, I don't really have those super concerns, because progress is never linear. Like, Kevin Porter Jr., if he's going to have the best career of himself, like, he's not going to have, like, exactly the linear progression that you might project. Like, we can sort of project sort of what he might be. We can project sort of some of the stuff for him that, you know, is ultimately going to work out. Mm-hmm. But if you sort of also just think about him in terms of his kind of how he's going to implement things and how he's going to kind of take his first year and improve on it. Like, it's not going to be a situation where he's going to go from A to B and it's going to be linear. Like, there are going to be things where you're like, I don't know why this regressed. Like, you theoretically, if you look at him, he shot, I think, like, you know, he was only shooting like 38% at the end of the month, and he's still kind of lower in terms of that. But if you look at kind of the most encouraging shooting number for me, it's 46.7% on catch and shoot three pointers. He's a really, really bad pull-up shooter. But let's say next year, like, his three-point shooting overall sort of remains the same, but he dips on catch and shoot for whatever reason. That's not something that I'm, because he's so young, because the situation's going to be weird, all that stuff. Like, I just don't believe that his progress is going to be linear. So, like, even if he struggles in year two and things look different, and he's a guy that I think could be, you know, will be impacted by another body coming in, will be impacted by Dylan Windler's return, will be impacted by a team that will probably have a better plan for Andre Drummond next year. Like, I just think there's going to be some stuff that is going to affect him more than it might affect some other guys, just because I think he got some opportunity this year that, you know, it's an unknowable question, but I just, you know, I wonder if he kind of is brought along a little slower if Dylan Windler isn't out the whole year, you know? And I wonder if next year Windler comes in and just kind of plays really well and gets his chance. And that's just going to impact Porter in some way. And if they take a guy like Anthony Edwards, if they take a guy like, you know, they take any wing player, that's going to impact Porter too. So I just don't expect year two to be like an exact linear continuation for him, because he's so young, because he's clearly so raw. And just because there's just going to be more bodies at that wing spot.
You can easily say if Dylan Windler didn't have these recurring problems with the stress reaction in his leg, and, you know, we can speculate on that as all we want, what didn't cause it, but irregardless, the organization was sky high on Windler's potential, and shout out to Jason Lloyd for first, you know, kind of saying this out, throwing this out there into the waters, and that kind of verified it, that the Cavs kind of envisioned that maybe Windler could be starting at some point this season, and, you know, obviously the injury kind of just threw that off the rails, and gave Kevin Porter an opportunity to carve out a bench rotation with the Cavs and, you know, eventually just start become a starter and just a consistently good player for them off the bench, because I forget who originally wrote it, but I do remember reading that one of the reports on Kevin Porter after the Cavs drafted him is somebody in the front office said that he has the potential to be playing meaningful minutes off the bench, but there's a good chance he could be spending the majority of his season in the G League with the Charge. That was definitely a realistic possibility with Windler, if Windler was healthy, but I think Kevin Porter has more or less cemented himself, and I think Dylan Windler is going to be the one who's playing catch-up, especially if the Cavs do end up drafting a wing in this year's draft, whenever that does end up happening.
The other thing about this, and this is from the great rookie review series from Nylon Calculus that our good friend Ian Levy wrote about. You can go listen to our Darius Garland podcast with him. So basically, I'll link this in the show notes below. Basically, he kind of wonders this. Here's the kicker to this.
Mm-hmm.
the quote, that late winter hot streak and the height of his highs this season will probably enough to preserve the optimism around Porter's ceilings. But he still really hasn't answered any of the meaningful questions about his game. He could be a dynamic three-level scorer, or he could be Jordan Clarkson, or, gulp, Jordan Crawford. Basically, I think Ian's point is that we just don't quite know exactly what he's going to be. There's just a lot of sort of noise in terms of his data, in terms of how we can distill it. There's just a lot of the tape, I think, outweighs sort of his what sort of the numbers would tell you about how effective he is right now. Like, and I think that's actually a very, I think I lost track of in kind of thinking about this. I don't think he's going to be Jordan Crawford. I think the Clarkson thing is interesting because that means he can get buckets, but he's sort of like an empty calories kind of guy to some degree. I think it's too early, but I think it's just worth noting that I would say I agree with Ian in the sense that there is a lot of positives. The highs are really high. We've talked about them a bunch. We still need to, I think there is, just in terms of him being the best version of himself, I don't think we know enough yet to be like, that's a lock to happen.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think maybe this is Cavs Twitter kind of breaking me at this point. Maybe it's a little silly to be putting ceilings or caps on players this young when we don't really have the insider wherewithal of a play of someone who works in the front office, who, you know, maybe has a better idea of what the Cavs envision for these players. So just enjoy it while we can. And yeah, maybe I do have my fears and reservations about things maybe going bad next year. But yeah, no, I think it's kind of hard to put a cap on it. And I really hope he doesn't end up like Jordan Crawford. And maybe Jordan Clarkson wouldn't be the worst. But I think KPJ has more defensive potential than Clarkson ever will. So
yeah, absolutely.
I'm holding out hope.
There's no world where I think he's like as bad of a defender as Jordan Clarkson often was. So I think we can kind of all sit and think about that and be like, okay, this is pretty normal, and we can sort of be comfortable, I think, with some of that. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, come back with more Lockdown Cavs. We're going to talk about the highs of Darius Garland's season right after this.
From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you watch the game, well, when you could, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast, and that's where Postmates comes in. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I mean, if you look at me, you really get that idea. I love food, and that's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Oh my gosh, I almost lost my breath from the excitement. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it, baby.
All right, we're back. Evan, let's get into the peak of Darius Garland's season. You and I kind of went through his box scores, kind of thought about this, and we zeroed in on a December 23rd game between the Cavs and the Hawks. The Cavs won 121-118 over Atlanta at home. This was his third high-scoring game of the season, but he has two other higher ones. He has other games where he had more assists, all that stuff. Evan, why did we pick this game as the peak of Darius Garland's first NBA season?
Well, for those listening at home who may be looking at these box scores and Darius Garland's stat lines right now, it's the only Cavs win. The other two remarkable games, at least in terms of scoring, were the Cavs getting shellacked. So it's not really nothing you can pull from that. So it's definitely a lot better. I mean, like you said, the assist numbers aren't great. He had one assist. He had one rebound in this game, but 21 points on 9-14 shooting, like, something to rub your hands about and get kind of excited with. Like, that's something you can work with.
So yeah, I think that's right. I think when you look at this game, here's just kind of the raw numbers for him in this one, in terms of his just kind of basic box score stats. Played 26 minutes, 21 points, had one assist, had two turnovers, but shot 3 of 5 from three and 9 of 14 from the field. You know, didn't take any free throws. So there's like little stuff you don't love. But if you just look at his ability to score, his ability to make shots, this is kind of one of the games that really just pops. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's other stuff in his season that I love. You know, you look at the passing stuff that came up from time to time. That was great. If you look at some of the other little wrinkles we've seen in terms of his ability to just start firing off deeper threes. Like that really was something that really came on for him, I think, later on in the season. But when you look at just sort of the games that, as you kind of noted, mattered for him, it's just like they were blown out in the other games that he scored this many points in. And mm-hmm. I think about his season, and I think about like him, this being his best game, like this is a guy that only had three games of 20 points or more. I'm going to double check that to make sure I'm correct. Yeah. He had three games of over 20, six, 20 or plus. In those, the Cavs only won two of those games. In terms of the assist totals, he only had one double-digit assist game. He had another three that were eight, so at least he kind of had a couple games where he was getting up there a little bit. In those games, those are mostly losses as well. Now, I don't really want to blame that on him because he's a young player who is on a pretty bad team, and there's just a lot of weird stuff with that. But I think when I just think about Darius' season, and it's just like I think maybe even more so than Kevin Porter Jr., I just think we don't know very much, and I think you're hoping next year is really a bounce back. But I think when you see a game like the Atlanta game, where like the scoring potential that the Cavs really, really hyped coming into the season was there more than anything else, I think that's like the best case scenario of him kind of working out in that way. And noteworthy to me, it's also a game where Colin Sexton scored 25 points, took 20 shots, and those guys were the two leading scorers on the team.
One, that's a good point where you can start to make a case of the Sexton-Garland backcourt being something of a long-term thing instead of, you know, I just kind of, you know, poo-pooing it a little bit. But, yeah, no, the scoring potential is definitely there, and I'm going through the numbers now. Like, his highest scoring game was 23 points in a 42-point loss to Dallas, so I don't know how much stock you can take from that. But, no, like you said, it showed a lot of his scoring potential overall in that game and just kind of like what you're hoping to get from him going forward. And it's just a shame because I kind of harp back to this point. I do wonder if we would have gotten a different Darius Garland experience, perhaps, if we had JB Bickerstaff running the show from the beginning instead of John Boeheim, because you and I have noted in episodes in the past where Colin Sexton just started off the season with a up and down a little bit, but then it started to have like a crazy upwards trend like he always did. But when JB became the coach, like, Sexton looked incredible, and like, you and I were super high on him. But then I also do wonder, like, maybe we would be singing the praises of Darius Garland a hell of a lot more if we saw a more simplified guard friendly offense like Sexton was, you know, being featured in, while Garland more or less was sidelined during the early beginnings of the JB Bickerstaff era.
I sometimes wonder if you have JB from day one, and I don't want to say like you pick I think like picking for positional or for need over talent is like overrated, especially when you're a team this bad. I've been thinking about that a lot lately in terms of like actually The Last Dance and some of the stuff around that. So I don't want to like go down that rabbit hole. But when I think about this, I just wonder if like if JB is the coach from day one, and the plan I think is obviously a little bit different with him in there. They won't say this, and like again, the Cavs like don't do media, so like we just like have no idea what they're really thinking right now. You know,
no. Which is very annoying. Guys follow Chris on Twitter, like when Chris says "must be nice," it's because, and I'm silently agreeing with him. It's just because
I'm just more openly annoyed about it than you.
Yeah. Oh no, I am Evan.
Can I get on a soapbox here for a second? Do you mind?
Go ahead.
It is stupid. Like, I understand that people are trying not to burn relationships. I understand that people like have other stuff they're doing right now. It's stupid that the collective media core has decided that like limited access is fine. That's whack.
Are we just talking in Cleveland sports? Or are we talking?
We're talking like, on our specific beat. I just think it's whack that we've decided that that's normal.
Yeah. No. It's super duper weird. And I'll join in the state box. I think it's whack when you have to work on, this is Evan's frustration hour, when you're working on a story with an athlete and his team is impossible to work with, and then you think, like, the fuck are they up to right now? No one can go anywhere or do anything.
And it's like I watched The Last Dance and I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, the access level is insane.
It really is.
And I'm not saying I deserve to, like, follow like Kevin Porter Jr. around the, and like document his season in that way. Like I'm not saying that like that's what I want, but I'm just saying like, you know what, like give me a conference call. Like let's like talk about what's going on with these guys, because that's better for your quote unquote brand than putting out like what quarantine, how Cavs quarantine house you want to be in.
Yeah, no, exactly. And
I'm so annoyed. This is just peak Chris.
No, I'm annoyed too, because GMs will just do random calls to the media, and I'm like, yeah, must be nice, because what must we'll be nice get
to have a media of a GM who does more media than besides like Goldman Sachs videos.
Yeah, Goldman Sachs videos, or when the season wraps up, they drop an impromptu saying, "Oh, Kobe Altman will be." Or if people don't figure it out now, we're talking about Kobe Altman.
Or like maybe you should actually speak to the media when your coach maybe used a racial slur in a meeting with. On a team of largely black players.
Yeah, that's a bad call. Or said coach realized he doesn't love basketball anymore. Like, you know, that's a golden opportunity. They did trade for Andre though, and he did talk to us then, which was
it was just do one in person. Like he didn't speak at media day.
No, and the problem is Kobe Altman's also a bit of a used car salesman where he's overwhelmingly positive about everything.
But I would rather take full stock
of what he's trying to say, because no, like if you try to ask him about anything like that's bad or kind of realistic, like I forget who asked. We're getting off a tangent here. We were talking about Darius Garland, but well, I remember when Isaiah Thomas was traded here, Kobe more or less said, like, we're not talking about the hip. I want to talk about Isaiah Thomas, the player. And I'm like, well, Isaiah Thomas, the player, has a bum hip, so we have to talk about it. And he kept deflecting it. I'm like, all right, well, I guess this is just how this show operates. We're going to just pretend this is normal. So,
yeah, it's whack. But I think, though, just in thinking about Darius, like, he's still, to steal from me again, it's just he is a black box. But I think the games where he scores a lot are really encouraging. But I also do wonder, like, if the Cavs could redo it, and if they have JB from day one, and that's the way they go, I wonder if they do something different. That's unknowable. That's not fair to Darius. That's unfair to Kobe Altman. That's unfair to anybody. But I wonder if, like, they change their minds a little bit. Like, I'm not saying Jarrett Culver, who's the guy I think you and I both advocated for.
Yeah.
He's not exactly had, like, a great, great year, but it's like, you know, you think about that and you wonder if there's a wing in there instead of the thing. It's like you wonder if things are a little different. But I also do want to say, like, I want to see what happens with Darius next year. What happens if the season comes back? I think he's a guy that's going to benefit for some time. And there is, like, truly encouraging stuff in terms of his ability to get shots off, his range, all that stuff. There's just little stuff where you want to see if it improves when – if it's going to be a thing with him where he can't get to the finish at the rim very well and that kind of stuff, or if it's just he needed the year to get into the NBA and kind of develop. Yeah.
I'm on record as saying this. Like, I'm not too worried about Darius right now. Like, it's just kind of been an up-and-down year, and, like, people have said, and you and I have said, and many other people have said he's essentially a high schooler transitioning to the pros after not really playing in college. Like, I know it seems like a tired excuse, but it's a realistic thing. And I'm okay with saying, like, you give him a DNC, and if you actually want to give him a letter grade, like, sure, fail him. Like, he had a bad rookie year, like, let's be honest, but I'm not willing to sell the ship on him yet. But if he looks this bad this time next year, yeah, then I'll start actually raising concern internally and get a friendly call from some folks in the NBA saying they're disappointed with me saying negative things about Darius Garland. So until then, I'm willing to throw caution to the wind and just be overwhelmingly positive and just hope for the best and not expect the worst.
I am just going to say, I have a video up of his game from the Hawks. I pulled it up as you were talking, and I'm like watching the first shot he makes. So he's on the right wing. Trae Young's guarding him. Kevin Love sets kind of like, it's not quite a screen, but he slips through behind Trae. John Collins follows him in. He gets Trae committed like fully towards the other way, and he steps back and he fires off a three. And Trae's an objectively terrible defender, but Darius is able to get the shot off. He gets it off clean. He strokes it. Like, there's encouraging, like, really interesting stuff that makes him different than Colin, that makes him a real interesting prospect. This game, I'll link to the highlights below in the show notes if you're listening, or when you're listening to this, if you want to check them out later. But this is a guy that I think the potential is there. We just need to see, like, a lot more of it. But this is the kind of game where you're like, when the Cavs were like, we saw him shoot in LA and he was bombing like threes out of the workouts, like that's the kind of stuff you're hoping he gets to.
Yeah, no, that's what you just kind of hope for. But I don't know. I guess more so you can hope all you want, but once I actually start seeing it, I'll start feeling a lot more positive about it. I guess I'm just indifferent at this point about Darius Garland's rookie year, and I guess you and I both have played this mental exercise a few times now. Like, I don't think there's many players sans Kevin Porter who the Cavs still ended up drafting at 30 or trading for, at least the draft race for, and maybe Brandon Clark. Like, besides those two, I really can't think you can make a legitimate case, or maybe Culver as well. Those three, you can make a legitimate case for fifth overall, but I still think drafting Garland is the right call, and don't sell the ship on him just yet, because he's still a teenager and he's still trying to find his footing in the league. And this is just kind of crappy overall, because this whole shutdown is just, you know, throwing a wrench into everything like teams like Cleveland are trying to work on and try and establish and develop.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, one last break for this episode. We'll be back for this episode of Locked On Cavs. Talk about Colin Sexton, the other Cavs young guard. So stay tuned. All right, we are back. Okay, Evan, Colin Sexton, we've talked a lot about him. We're both have come and say, you know, kind of point out how good we think he's become. What is for you something underrated about his season and his rise that you just want to just kind of highlight here?
It's remarkable, really, that it looked like his 3-point shot abandoned itself at him, and he just kind of Colin Sexton's just such a weird player. Like, he's the stereotype of he works really, really, really hard, and he just kind of wills being better into existence every single time. And like, it's indomitable at this point, where I don't really want to bet against Colin Sexton. Like, maybe, just maybe, we're going to get closer and closer to his ceiling. But I think Cavs Twitter broke me on this, and I think me just to kind of just doing some soul searching, and I wrote about this and we've talked about it. Like, I think I said earlier, like, it's silly to kind of put a ceiling on these young guys, but no, Sexton's been a revelation this year. And I think heading into next year, no matter what happens with Kevin Love and Andre Drummond, I think Sexton is easily Cleveland's best player heading into next year. And the potential's there, and if Kevin isn't a shithead, as he likes to call himself, and Andre Drummond doesn't think he's a point center, I think we could see another level of Colin Sexton's game being unlocked, because those are two complementary veteran big men that really, one, mask the deficiencies of Sexton defensively with Drummond, and two, like, it's a pick-and-pop partner with Love, not Drummond, just in case he's listening, and that's a pick-and-roll partner with both of them, and that just unlocks even more of his game, because we started to see Colin Sexton becoming more and more of a competent passer before the season came to a shutdown. And that's, I think, the next part of his game that needs to evolve besides defense. But on that right now, if he can become a competent playmaker on top of just being an elite scorer like he is, like, the Cavs are cooking here with a very, very good player, especially considering where he was drafted at 8th overall, which is kind of like a pick that's become synonymous with not being a great option.
Yeah, it can be hard to find guys at that level. For me, when I want to just say, and we got some requests to talk about this specific play when we asked you guys out there to kind of suggest sort of options for us and things to talk about. I think his dunk on Wendell Carter Jr., which I'm going to
insert. Oh, it's disgusting.
I'm going to play the audio of it for you listeners here now. But so we'll play that, and then we'll talk about it, because it's I think his play of the year, but it's quite, quite good. And so we're going to play that here.
Fox, 23 points, 10 rebounds.
A great game.
Sexton inside. Oh! A thunderous dunk to give the Cavaliers a 6-point lead. And the Bulls won another timeout. Oh, my.
Whoa.
Sorry. I snorted while we were listening to that, Chris. As an aside, Zach LaVine's all-time Chicago Bulls starting five is Derrick Rose at point, Michael Jordan at small forward, Scottie Pippen at power forward, Pau Gasol at center, and then himself at shooting guard.
Shouts to Zach LaVine. Live your life. Here's the thing about that Sexton dunk. Number one, Zach LaVine, and I think it underscores something that I think unfairly don't talk about with Sexton enough. I do think the guy really knows basketball. Like, that guy is a basketball nerd. He's a basketball junkie. I don't think he has, like, the court vision to pass guys open, at least not all the time, in the way you sort of would want from, like, your franchise. If he's going to be your lead usage guy, like, I think he doesn't have the vision to sort of pass guys open in that way. But when you see this play, you see a couple things that I think really pop with Colin. Number one, this isn't a design. Like the play here was Jordan Clarkson brings up the ball, and he's going to pass it to Kevin. Kevin's going to then make a play. That's the offense. He's posting up in the mid between the elbow and the 3-point line against Thad Young, and Kevin's ISOing. This is a clear dot for Kev. Okay, so what happens is Kevin gets the ball, he dribbles like one time, and what you see is everyone, including Zach, especially Zach LaVine, is glaring over at Kevin Love and Thad Young because they're just like, okay, I'm not going to think here. So what Colin does is he's got a couple feet of space between him and LaVine. He just bolts right past him. Otto Porter gives like a half-assed effort to like point out that Colin's going, right? But it's not quite enough. LaVine's like cooked. He doesn't really even try to get all the way back. Kevin sees it. Kevin passes it to him. Colin gets it. Yams on Wendell Carter Jr., who's coming back too late to help on defense there. What you see there is Colin is a really explosive athlete. He has the instincts to kind of make plays happen when they're not scripted in that way. And I think he can be comfortable off ball. And we've seen that with the catch and shoot. We've seen that with sort of his cutting ability at times. We've seen the Cavs this year really make an effort for him to do more off ball and not just have the ball in his hands all the time. And obviously I think he's most comfortable when he gets to attack and do that kind of stuff. But like that play is just, I think, a little encapsulation of some of the stuff we don't appreciate enough with Colin. And I'll be curious to see what that looks like. You know, if Kevin and Drummond come back next year and that's sort of the pillars of your team, so to speak, that kind of stuff from Colin maybe doesn't end in highlights like that all the time and kind of ice games for you, but that's going to become more and more important as we go forward for him.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I'm interested to see what the next step is in Colin Sexton's game. It's either going to be playmaking, and like you said, he probably doesn't have the ability to be a lead ball handler, and the fact that he can be setting up an offense and being the primary, like he can be a primary initiator in terms of scoring, sure, that's fine. But I wonder maybe if defense is the next thing he kind of works on as well. Like, as everyone knows, Colin put on a considerable amount of muscle mass heading into this season, and still wasn't great defensively, and maybe actually working with a competent coach like JB will definitely help that. I don't expect him to be a world beater on defense, and I don't think the Eric Bledsoe comparisons, which was a lazy one, he was getting when he was coming out of Alabama, are definitely accurate. But I think there's the potential there for Colin to be a solid enough defender. And like, I think this, his junior campaign, if we're going rookie, sophomore, whatever, I think this is where Colin starts to just round out some of the flaws and deficiencies in his game, and maybe we can finally start to quantify what exactly Colin Sexton is, and maybe there's something else that unlocks as well in terms of scoring and just the potential in that regard. But no, he's a very good player, and I'm very excited to see what happens. And I don't think I was very firm in saying that at the end of the season, or if it comes back, whatever, that the players I'm most excited about heading into next season for the Cavs are Colin Sexton and Kevin Porter, when I would have thought that Darius Garland would be in the mix as well. But those two are firmly up there, and I think just Sexton's potential is the sky. Like, there's no way to really put a cap or a ceiling on it at this point. Yeah.
I think for him, the one thing I'll note is defensively, he went from being one of the worst defensive players in the league last year to like still bottom third among point guards, but not as nearly as dreadful.
That's something to work with. And also, you just said Zach LaVine was cooked there and not trying. How dare you? He just said he was the all-time shooting guard for the all-time Chicago Bulls team. So put a little respect on my man's name.
Okay, sure. All right, that's going to be it for this week. Or not this week, but this episode. We'll be back tomorrow with another look back at this season. Going to talk about the JB to JB transition, Tristan Thompson, and that great overtime win against Miami Heat. So stay tuned for that on the next episodes of Locked On Cavs. And thanks for